This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Uconnex. Uconnex provides digital solutions and teams to brands, CMOs, VPs, and marketers looking for true transparency in the biddable media space. From paid social and PPC to complex platforms like The Trade Desk. Oh my gosh, what a segue that's going to be for today. Brands from across the world have connected to Uconnex. Visit them at uconnex.com and No Kid Hungry. We're proud to promote No Kid Hungry and their many initiatives to help kids in need of meals. No Kid Hungry helps kids be kids, not be hungry. Visit them at nokidhungry.org. And finally, we're proud that season 3 of the CMO Suite is presented by the CMOCouncil.org as their official marketers podcast. The Chief Marketing Officer Council is the only global network of executives specifically dedicated to high-level knowledge exchange, thought leadership, and personal relationship building among senior corporate marketing leaders and brand decision makers. The CMO Council's 15,000 plus members control more than $550 billion in aggregated annual marketing expenditures and run complex distributed marketing and sales operations worldwide. For more information on membership, visit cmocouncil.org. Let's start the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the CMO Suite Season 3. This is your host, Sean Halter, and I have with me today, helping to co-produce, it's Kat. Kat, how are you over there today?
I'm feeling lovely.
You were so nice. You know, I didn't mean to throw the mic over to you, and then I threw you off. Yesterday, we had hockey in here, and so you were all over the microphone. Mm-hmm.
I knew everything about that.
The trade desk is what we're going to be talking about today. How much do you know about the trade desk, Kat?
Not a whole lot, okay, but I'm going to do my best.
You're going to do your best. And also, co-hosting with me today is Stacey Horton. Stacey, how are you? Is your mic live and ready to go?
Great to be back.
All right, the mics are all on. The gang is all here, and we are excited to introduce our guest today, Todd Krugman. Todd is the Senior Vice President of Marketing for The Trade Desk. The Trade Desk, which is now a public company, offers a self-serve technology platform to brands and agencies to manage biddable and data-driven media campaigns. Todd, how did I do?
You did perfectly.
I was spot on or darn close to it?
Very close.
I had to throw the fact that it's, you know, a publicly traded company out there, because we've worked with The Trade Desk since you guys were all just a wee small lad in the space to some extent. I think we started working with you guys when maybe you had maybe, I don't know, 100 or 150 employees. Yeah. And now how many employees do you guys have?
We have over 1,000 and growing quickly.
Yeah, I feel like every time I'm in your offices, there's like a whole nother new crew. And you guys have moved at least once since we started working with you guys. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't shock me if at some point you guys end up, you know, taking over even more space somewhere.
We actually are funny that we mention it. We're heading to the Grace Building right near Bryant Park in Q1 of next year.
And will that be a sub office for you guys, or are you moving the whole crew all over again?
We're moving the whole crew.
That is crazy.
We're getting 3 floors. And it's gonna be just an amazing office. It's really starting to shape up to be incredible.
And so the space you guys are in right now, I feel like you guys have been in it for a couple of years now, maybe two, 3 years?
Yeah, two or three years.
And now you've outstripped it. We've outgrown it. Baby's all grown up. If only I had bought the stock when my buddy Nin over there was like, you know, we might go public at some point. There was no insider trading, I can tell you that. He just said you guys might go public at some point. Don't hate on me, Nin. And then I was like, yeah, you know, okay. I never take the good stock tips, Stacey. If I had, we probably none of us would. Well, at least I know I wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
I don't know about everybody else. I can't speak on their behalf. So,
it's
Todd,
never too late, though.
That's true. That is a very good point. It is never too late, and you guys obviously you continue to grow and grow, and you continue to kind of find your footing in the space. And I want to make sure we talk about that a little bit. Speaking of finding your footing, you guys are also expanding worldwide. We want to talk about some of that expansion to some extent. So, Todd, talk to us a little bit. First of all, how long have you been at The Trade Desk now? And your title is, Senior Vice President of Marketing, correct?
Yeah. So I've been at The Trade Desk for 9 months now, so not that long. Prior to that, I was at Ogilvy for over a decade. And before that, at various agencies within the WPP universe. But my role at The Trade Desk really is to oversee the brand. All of the external communications that we have to make sure that what we're putting out into the market is great work.
You're talking about the fact that you kind of came up through the agency space, and I know when I look back through your profile a little bit when I was LinkedIn stalking you guys, you had talked about the fact that I think you'd actually been at a couple of agencies, and then you left to go to another agency, and then you came back to a couple of them a couple times, didn't you?
Yeah,
you do a couple of different runs?
I started at Young and Rubicam kind of at the – peak of Young and Rubicam in 96, and it was just the best first agency to start at, because at that time they had a training program for all account managers, and I was a part of it. And so I was sort of with 125, 130 other 24, 25-year-olds, and we just ran around the entire agency.
Owning the place.
Keeping it going. And then I went to Ogilvy and then back to Young and Rubicam, and then had a small stint at Tishman Speyer, and then made a big move to Asia with Ogilvy, and I had been there for 10 years.
And that Tishman Speyer time frame, that was there an insurance or banking company or
real estate?
Okay,
yeah.
Real estate, yeah.
Yeah.
And was it a marketing position, I think, for them?
It was. They were starting to grow and expand as well, and were looking to try and build out their marketing function. And I helped one of my old bosses do that.
And so how was that not to make it go too far back, but how was that transition a little bit? Because really that was not your first non-agency job, but it was kind of your first marketing job after you had kind of done your time through the agency space. And so obviously you're back in that space to some extent, have been for some time, but was it, this show is built for chief marketing officers and VPs and CEOs to some extent to be able to just understand the function. Last year, I think our theme was international. We had 16 guests total, and I think we had like 6 continents represented. It was insane where all these people, were from. This year, I think I'm trying to think of the theme, and it's either going to be something sports related, or it's gonna be the dawn of a new age, or something where, again, I just feel like that chief marketing officers and VPs of marketing, they need to understand that they're all in this together. It's hard.
Yeah.
But there's hope. And maybe that's what this season will be about.
It. Yeah, hope.
The dawn of a new hope or something. It sounds like a Star Wars title, doesn't it? Probably already is one. I don't know. And so how was that first time out of this of the agency space? What did you feel like you learned?
It was a really great experience. Tishman Speyer is an incredible company. It's not incredibly well known amongst the general consumer, but within the real estate circles, it's arguably one of the most premier companies out there. They own Rockefeller Center, the MetLife building, the Chrysler building. I mean, it's a lot of pretty storied real estate. And our job really, as they were expanding, was to try and develop a brand for them that would coincide with their growth and the sort of premium nature of the company. It was a lot of fun. It was a 3-year stint. And my boss had moved to Australia, who had hired me at Tishman Speyer. And then he hired me down to a role on the agency side back in Australia.
And so did you head from there to Australia?
Mm-hmm.
And how was that?
It was incredible.
Did you grow up here in the city, or did you live somewhere else?
So I grew up in Colorado, and then I moved here after college and spent around 10 years in New York. And then I moved to Australia and spent 10 years in Asia, Australia, Singapore, and Japan. And then I moved back here a couple years ago.
I think my son is probably going to kick me when I get home. I don't think of Australia as part of Asia.
Yeah.
But it is.
It is, yeah.
Right?
It was. And we actually, it was the kind of like the perfect job, because have you ever been to Australia?
No. We've talked about it a lot, but it's such a far trip.
It's far. It is. I'm not going to lie. But
you almost feel like you have to hit Fiji while you're over there, because you can't get that close to Fiji and not go to Fiji.
Yeah, that's true too.
Yeah.
You can stop on the way. There are flights that do that. It's pretty close. But it's a beautiful, amazing, special place. And my job at the time was headquartered in Sydney, but I traveled extensively into Asia. So I was in China all the time, in Japan, in Singapore, in India. And this was at a period of time where they were just at the cusp of exploding with growth. And so I spent 10 years really, enmeshed in that growth and enmeshed in those cultures. And it was a brilliant experience.
You know, it's kind of interesting. We've had the chance to interview a lot of global CMOs. And so you get exposed, as I said last year, I mean, we had a lot of international folks from all over the world. You get exposed to this whole other part that isn't the U.S. And you think the U.S. is everything. And it obviously is extremely important to the marketing function. But it is interesting to kind of layer in some of that international piece. I know for us, when we started our very first advertising agency, out of Florida, you know, the hope was, well, geez, if we could pick up some clients in Orlando and maybe Tampa, we could maybe rub a couple of nickels together.
Yeah.
And then about 5 years ago, we took out a round of VC funding. We couldn't find exactly what we needed in the digital space, in the programmatic space, which that term even 5 years ago for a lot of people was like, what's that? And we couldn't find somebody who could be extremely transparent. We'd actually, I won't go too deep in, but we had actually looked at the Trade Desk back then. I didn't know anything about those platforms. And so I was like, okay, this thing looks like a Ferrari. I don't even know who I'd find to drive that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we tried a couple of different platforms. We built our team out. And eventually we made our way back to the Trade Desk. But it was our first opportunity through working through the Trade Desk platform and our own internal traders to be able to actually put together some international campaigns. We did some campaigns for Tidal, the streaming service, I think in maybe 6 or 7 different countries. I mean, we did several campaigns over the last handful of years, also internationally. And now we have a semi-consistent amount sometimes of some campaigns that are overseas. It's odd to think of to some extent, isn't it?
It's absolutely profound. And particularly, we recently launched into China. And for me, that was quite an amazing moment because I had spent 10 years of my life really building the IBM brand in Asia and specifically building teams in China to deploy advertising. And when I arrived at the Trade Desk, the first project that I was basically given was you have to launch
China.
We're launching in China. And so, you know, I dug into it and we had a very successful launch. But the notion that you can be sitting in New York or LA or London and trade and deploy media campaigns and advertising into China without having a huge infrastructure there is incredibly profound. It's an amazing thing.
And so let's talk about the Trade Desk for just a second. Again, I don't want the whole episode to be all about that part. Obviously, it's what you're doing. The China part is really exciting. You know, it's easy when we're interviewing the CMO for Burger King to understand, okay, well, he's got to sell hamburgers, right?
Yeah.
The Trade Desk for us, you know, we understand what it is because we operate within it. But for a lot of people, they still probably don't actually understand what that is. And even when I say the term programmatic or biddable, there's still probably plenty of CMOs that are like, I kind of know what that is, but I'm not 100% sure really what happens in the space. And so between the two of us, maybe we could break that down without going too far down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
From our perspective, the easiest explanation that we usually give of it is that it is a form of biddable media, which is any form of media where you're actually bidding on that media itself. We typically describe that it's similar to trading stocks to some extent. You know, if you ever walk through our trading teams or you walk through the Trade Desk to some extent, you guys used to have everybody literally sitting in the same room and you could see all these banks of monitors and computers. But really, when you kind of boil it down, that's really to some extent what it is.
Yeah.
It's a, would you say that it's a giant DSP to some extent, a demand side platform?
Yeah.
And so publishers offer up their inventory similar to what they do in Google, right? At the same time, you guys offer some things that are a little bit different than Google, one of which for us that tends to kind of stand out is the amount of data partners that you can layer into certain campaigns.
Yep.
Google is a bit more of a walled garden. They've built a $1 billion giant, enormous company doing just that and kind of making everybody still kind of guess exactly maybe how it kind of works.
Yep.
Whereas you guys are a lot more maybe transparent in the space and this is how it works. You guys typically work with agencies, correct?
Yep.
And to some extent, obviously maybe some larger brands, but typically, and again, maybe that's changing to some extent, typically a brand isn't working directly with you guys. They're normally working through an agency partner, and that agency partner may or may not have their own internal traders that are trading through the platform.
Yeah.
How did I do?
You did incredibly well. Absolutely summarized the business perfectly. I think, you know, as the space continues to evolve too, and it becomes even more important as part of sort of a CMO's overview of what they do, it is becoming more important for them to really understand it though, because I think traditionally a lot of CMOs and brand marketers have relied on just Google and Facebook as part of an overall spend, and then they'll have a little bit left that they kind of push out, and that goes into programmatic usually. But they're seeing that as they're collecting more and more first-party data, they're trying to figure out how they can use that in a way that's really going to help them grow their brand.
Sure.
And I think you can't do that with Facebook, you can't do that with Google in terms of how it's applied, but with our platform, you can. Because it's open, they're able to apply a lot of their data onto our platform and deploy their campaigns and have a holistic view across sort of the rest of the internet, so to speak, aside from the walled gardens, as to how their campaigns are performing and how they can optimize. And then they can use all of that data to improve their own campaign performance.
It's certainly not slowing down, just meaning, to your point, the world of having all of this data, and then the question becomes kind of what do we do with it? You know, for us, I know we looked at building out our own DSP, and at some point, you know, logistically, it doesn't make sometimes a lot of sense. You guys do continue to expand in some different areas. We talked just before starting the show about the fact that we've got a large-scale CBD client. We're always typically an early adapter when it comes to the trade desk. You guys will launch something new. We'll get a call sometimes from somebody, and they'll say, hey, we've got this kind of inventory now. And we'll often try to figure out, okay, can we be one of those early groups? Uconnex, which is our company that trades on the platform, is not an agency. It's kind of a managed service provider. And so that was one space that we felt like there was maybe a little more need that was out there, this blend between an agency that might say, we've got this, don't worry about this, right, and a CMO kind of saying, but I need to know what it is.
Yeah.
And at the same time, maybe not wanting to have to deploy their own entire kind of internal teams.
Yeah.
We're transparent in our process. We do a CPM add-on for services. So that also seems to sometimes help CMOs because they're able to better understand the difference between, say, buying it from a large-scale media company that says, okay, well, if you need a $3 CPM, we'll find a way to do it.
Yeah.
But you don't really see the inventory. Sometimes the inventory isn't maybe the inventory that you want. And that is one of the beauties sometimes of using a platform like the Trade Desk, is you actually get to see in. You can see where things go, why
right.
a $12 CPM may sometimes make more sense than a $9 CPM
right.
because what you're getting.
That's exactly right.
And CPM stands for cost per thousand. For those of you that don't understand that, that's the buying measurement tool to some extent with a lot of those forms of digital media.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we are seeing that. There's some incredible case studies of how companies have who normally could never afford to advertise on, say, live sports during the NCAA playoffs or during football, they can get access to that premium inventory in those live sports through the Trade Desk. And while they're paying, from a digital advertiser perspective, a huge CPM, they're actually getting a huge ROI because they're getting way more eyeballs and they're getting the audience they exactly need to reach.
Yeah.
And it's worked out incredibly well for a lot of our clients.
As you expand into China a bit, so are you traveling back to Asia now as part of your job function? Are you building marketing opportunities there? Or how does that work, Todd?
I haven't been yet. A lot of the 9 months.
Are you allowed back in the country? I mean, is everything okay over there?
Everything's good.
Okay, just checking.
Still have friends, colleagues. Can't wait to get back there. The first 9 months really I've spent has been building out the team and really developing our own approach to how we're going to build our own brand. And that's why I was hired, in essence, is Jeff Green and Susan Vobeda, the CMO, and the entire executive team feel like the Trade Desk is a company with an incredible story, and that story just hasn't been told.
They're not wrong.
They've asked me to try and help tell that. So
that's a good point. Let's dig into that for just a few minutes if we can. You know, there's a lot of companies out there, especially in the B2B space. You come out with a great product. You experience incredibly rapid growth because there's a need and you're solving a problem.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot easier, I don't want to say easier to sell something when you're solving a problem, but when you have a very specific need, it's a little easier sometimes because people are obviously seeking you guys out.
Yeah.
At the same time, there's complexity to it. You know, to my point, when we first looked at you guys, we were like, this thing's a Ferrari. I don't even know how to drive this thing. we used to sometimes kind of tease some of the earlier employees over there about the fact that you work with all of these agencies and yet your own internal stuff sometimes it just wasn't there, right? Or the training videos were like 2 years old and you're like, this is kind of crazy, guys. I mean, and I know as we would kind of lean in and say, could we get this or is this available or how do we use this or what pieces can we have to kind of push out to our clients so they can help understand it?
Yeah.
I think sometimes that's like a painter, you know, house painter, you go to their house and their house has been painted in 10 years.
Yeah.
You guys had experienced so much rapid growth that the actual internal marketing pieces of marketing wasn't that it was a challenge. It was just hard to find the time or the resources to be able to kind of put towards it. And so it sounds like, again, that's kind of really where you're fitting in that space. Did they have, I apologize if I didn't know this, there's also CMO within within the trade desk as well, correct?
There is, yeah. Susan Vobeda.
Yeah, and does she work out here in New York
she
or
out
of
out
Los Angeles?
New York.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so how do you guys split up those responsibilities? Do you duel over the good stuff?
We do.
Pieces of cake?
We basically do that. I think she is constantly across, obviously, everything, the comms piece of it, the events piece of it. We do a lot of events every year. She's across a lot of the product marketing, which is incredibly important.
Which has gotten amazing, by the way.
And
so
yeah.
Know that even though I say, you know, we used to tease you guys a bit, it's gotten better and better every year,
as
it should.
Yeah, as it should. And we continue to hire engineers at a huge rate to just make improvements on a daily basis. We're pushing new product out every single week and updates to the product. But I think she definitely relies on me to do a lot of the brand work and creative work. And in the last 9 months, we have spent a huge amount of effort to try and get our story down. And we're about to, I think right after this launches in September, a new campaign will be released. And it's going to be a pretty big effort that we're putting a lot of money.
And how did you guys build that campaign? Did you work with an outside agency for it?
We did. We worked with BBH and VSA. And in tandem, we dug into the company and the culture and what's happening in the world and developed a new brand platform. It's the first time we're really going out with a cohesive story and a cohesive message around the brand. And then we're going to just build on that in the coming years. This is going to be sort of not a short-term campaign, but something that will hopefully
be a launch point to build
for
off of
a long time.
How was that process? Because you guys really didn't have an agency of record
before,
we didn't, right?
Yeah.
And were you involved in that selection process a little bit?
They had done it right before I came.
Of course.
Which was
welcome.
Fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome. Here's your agency. And that was fine. They're an incredibly smart group of people.
Yeah.
Both companies, BBH and VSA, they both bring different
skill
things
sets to
the
table.
But ultimately, BBH, the strategic thinking and the creative thinking has just really helped us get to a different level, and VSA has reshaped our brand, and we're going to launch a whole new brand identity in the coming weeks as well.
And sometimes you need that. Sometimes you need an outside perspective. You know, there's always a lot of discussion and it continues of insourcing and outsourcing, what things make sense to keep in-house. Certainly, you know, trading teams and those kinds of things are part of that piece. But when it comes to building your brand or having somebody help tell your story, sometimes there's nothing wrong with using someone who has an independent eye to be able to just push back sometimes. You know, that pushback sometimes is the hardest thing. When you're internal, it's really hard to say to the president, well, you know, that makes sense, but what about this?
Yeah.
Whereas sometimes if you have an outside group, maybe, you know, it's there.
But all that said, we also have an internal agency,
of course,
too. And I will say that I kind of came in and that team, I was a little kind of concerned because I had come from an agency side and I had seen the shift happening across a lot of companies, including the brands I was working on at IBM when I was at Ogilvy. And I was a bit skeptical, okay, it's an in-house agency, is it going to be that good? But the team that I inherited is phenomenal as well. And I think for me, that was something coming in that I wasn't quite sure about, but now we're firing on all cylinders because we've just launched a huge campaign targeting traders. And we have so much more in the hopper that's going to come out soon.
And so that's a fair point. Sometimes you don't always realize there's already a lot of soldiers that are behind the scenes. As I said, everything's gotten over the last 2-3 years, everything we get from you guys just gets better and better each time. And obviously the internal team plays a big role in that. And then to put a button on again, sometimes then you pull in some outside people again
to get a different perspective.
Outside perspective, and then everybody works together for hope. So speaking of hope, since this is going to be a season of hope, what do you hope to learn next year? What do you hope to learn more about next year?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think next year, at least for me, this has been an important foundation year to try and nail down, sort of understand my team, see where we had gaps and try and fill those gaps, which we've done. We're going to come out with, I think, a lot more thought leadership content. We're going to expand on the brand platform that we're going to be launching. And I think, I hope by the end of next year that the marketing for the Trade Desk will have kept up with the growth of the company, and that the story will be told, I think, in a much better way, and more people will know it, and more people will engage with our platform and use us.
Now that you've made it through this podcast, you said you've done a couple.
Yeah.
So this is maybe your third or fourth.
I rank it top.
Are you ready for a series? Can we come back and
we could do a series. We would love it.
Whether that's you and I, or come on, let me. I know the platform, for crying out loud. I knew it back when I still had flashcards to try to help understand what the difference between a DSP was and an SSP. And so I don't know. I'm gonna lean on you post this so that we can come back and do like a 5 or 6 part podcast series that you guys will push out.
That would be great.
Fair enough. He says yes, but Stacey, I'm gonna hold him to it. Even if we have to go over to Asia, we should do some stuff over in Asia.
It'd be great. We would love it. We have a whole training program around all this archaic language that we use in programmatic. So we can maybe incorporate that.
There is a beauty in podcasting, if for no other reason than for many of us that commute to work to some extent, it's become the go-to vehicle to be able to just kind of learn a little bit on the fly. It's the old kind of, a books on tape thing. Like, anybody knows what tape is anymore, but it does give you a chance to kind of chew some things up into some bite-sized pieces, and hopefully everybody takes a couple of things away from each of these that we're doing. So, listen, Todd, we want to thank you for joining us on the show. I told you it would be fairly painless. I think we hit almost everything that you guys were like, hey, could we talk about Asia? Could we hit on this? And at the same time, I'm sure some people listening to this episode will still be like, okay, so
what
remind me what the CPM part of this is, right? And how does that work? Listen, if you've got more questions about how it works, and if your agency has absolutely no idea, which happens sometimes because we're all still trying to learn out there, all you got to do is just find a Todd on LinkedIn and stalk him, as I often have.
Yeah.
Or Google. Am I allowed to say Google the Trade Desk? That seems kind of
you can.
Is it not? No. It's not counterproductive.
We all use
it?
Google.
We all got to use Google.
It's super important.
Find out a little bit more about the platform, or just continue to educate yourself on what's happening in the biddable media space, because certainly as the years continue, the way that inventory is bought or sold will continue to evolve in that space. There's certainly an efficiency of scale, and there's a level of transparency. And to your point, the ability to take a lot of your data and layer it over the top, the Trade Desk is certainly a forerunner and very, very, very unique in that space, I would say, to some extent. Thanks for being on the show. Kat, take us out of the show. Thanks, Todd.
For hanging out in the CMO suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting, but your agency should. UConnects provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to UConnects today for a free demo. UConnects, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.